Good morning. So, last time, we finished up talking about Big O. So we mentioned some useful properties when comparing Big O's, like that all logs are the same, that polynomials are always better than exponentials in Big O, that the polynomial degree is all that matters, that when you're like looking at code, you follow this general strategy. If you have a loop, you just go outside in or inside out, you just can go piece by piece, multiply the times together. We looked at that sort of reasoning, and we also went through some common Big O classes and sort of the intuition you should have for each of them about what it means when we say something is quadratic, what sort of thing is going on that reflects that amount of work. And we started talking about the motivation for trees. So any questions about Big O related things before I move on and just talk about trees? Okay. So last time we finished up saying, our definition of a tree, which was that we have relationships, like linked list has relationships, but we have a little more flexibility than that. We don't just have every item's related to a predecessor and successor. We have a single path from something called root to every node. And we have this example, and I have a zoomed in thing here. And we have a root that's up here, and off the root we have a path that goes all the way down from the root that just splits off. But there's a single path from the root to each of the nodes. And we can see that where there's a common ancestor kind of categorizes things. And this is commonly how we use trees. And here, these are a bunch of species. So them being under the same ancestor like actually is information for us. Note that this tree is, I guess, mostly binary, but that is not a requirement of trees. Though most commonly in this class, we will be working with binary trees just because, well, two is the simplest number that is interesting. One, you have a linked list. Two, you can actually do useful things, and it's not, for our purposes, much more useful than three for most of the things we'll end up doing. And another sort of example of a natural tree, don't have a zoomed in slide for this, is that this is a tree of languages. So we have our root language and languages that were historically derived from them. So in this case, we have a single root because all these languages derive from one. And we have relationships which indicate some going forward in time. And we think that this should have a tree structure. This kind of gives us the motivation why we'll see later on. Maybe we don't actually want a tree to represent some of these things. Because that restriction that there's a single path from this single root means that we're making this assumption about the world that we want to look at how languages are related to each other. And we're going to say, we assume all languages we're interested have like single ancestors, that they aren't a mix of two languages or something like that. And with a tree, we can't represent that in this sort of way. You have to make a choice as to which one is the way we go to the root. So, yeah, most of the time we're dealing with a binary tree. So you can think of this as that we have an element and we have three related nodes. One of them I'll call the parent. The parent is the node that gets us closer to the root. It's where that single path to the root goes. And then we have a left and a right child in a binary tree. We have two. We'll call them left and right just arbitrarily. We'll usually have a convention for what we put on the left side and what we put on the right side, depending on what we're representing in the tree. And notably, not all of these related nodes have to exist. So if we have the root node, for example, won't have a parent because you're already there. You don't need to do anything to get a path to the root. And more generally, we'll just have multiple childs, and we'll probably just say child 1, 2, 3, or left, middle, right, or something like that. We'll come up with some way of saying which of the children we're referring to. Okay. And so let's go through some terminology that we're going to use a lot, because we want to refer to things and trees relative to each other. And I don't just want to point at a picture and say that node. I want to say have names. So as I said, the root is the node with no parents. There should be exactly one in a tree. If you have more than one node with no parents, what you have isn't a tree, it's something else. Nodes which have the same parent are called siblings. So they're children of the parent, so they're called siblings. And nodes with no children are called leaves. So any questions on any of these terms? We'll also be talking about height. So, and we'll talk about both the height of a tree and of a node. The height of a node is the longest path from that node to a leaf that doesn't go through the root. So going down through children. I should write this down. So the longest path going down from the root to a leaf. So if you consider that the root of a tree, the longest path that is the distinguished one that goes through parent up through parents from a leaf. So in this tree, for example, the height of B is 2 because the longest path to a leaf is 1, 2. We don't consider the path to E because that goes up. We only want to go path going down. And similarly, the height of C is 1 because we have a path of length 1 to all of these children. And the height of a leaf is always 0 because there's no children to go through. So the longest path we can find is just the empty path. It's just a path which has nothing on it. And when we're talking about the height of a tree, we mean the height of the root node. In that case, this is 3. We have some paths of length 2, so we can go A, C, E. That's a path with 2 edges on it. But our longest path to a leaf is A, B, D, H, and that's length 3. And so the height of A is 3, and therefore the height of the tree overall is 3. Another term we'll have is the depth of a node, and that's the length of a path to the root. So the root always has depth 0, and in this example where we had our longest path, that has depth 3 because the unique path to the root is from H to D to B to A for there. And for example, for F, the unique path is F to C to A. And because trees always have exactly one path, there's no ambiguity here. We don't have to decide whether we're taking the maximum, just the length of the path to the root. So questions on depth? Yes.
Is it conventional to start numbering from 0 instead of going 1, 2, 3, 4 rather than 0, 1, 2, 3?
Yes, let's get to that. So I probably should have put this slide first. So when we're talking about a path, I mean a sequence of nodes, such that in the tree, each node is a parent of the others for the types of paths we're talking about. So we just need a path. This is a path. This means IE. So this is this path goes conceptually down the tree. And we're going to define for this class the length of a path to be the number of edges. And so that's where that convention that we start at 0 is. So the path, it's the number of edges, not the number of nodes in the path. Which is usually whenever you see anything dealing with paths in something like a tree, that's usually they're going to define it by a number of edges. We also might occasionally see this term internal path length, which is something completely different, which is the sum of the depths of the nodes in the path. I don't know if we'll use that very often, but that's something completely different if you see it. Usually we'll just be talking about the length of a path, which is just count the edges. And for our purpose for talking about trees, we're only going to care about the types of paths which go down from parent to child. We're never going to deal with paths that go somehow through the root and back down. And we're kind of representing that because we have a downward arrow on this, that our nodes, our edges are directional, and we're going to only follow them in one direction. So, any questions on these definitions? Okay. So, this is the sort of mathematical properties of a tree, and there are going to be multiple ways of representing this data structure if we're like writing C++ code. So, I'll go through one common option, which is perhaps not the one you would have come up with. And that's that if we want to represent tree, we'll have some class representing it, and we'll have a pointer to its first child and to its next sibling. So probably the obvious representation you would have thought of is something more like this, where you have a list of children. So the advantage of this sort of representation is all our nodes are the same size. The other representation, we have this very dynamic array inside, so our nodes aren't the same size. And usually the notion, if you're choosing this representation, you're kind of making an assumption that if I'm going to look at the children of a node, I'm just going to look at all of them anyway, so I don't really care about being able to randomly access like the second one. And if you're making that assumption, this sort of representation is very attractive. So any questions on this representation? So this picture here is not what the tree logically looks like. The tree logically has these edges here and not the ones that go across. But the pointers we're using to represent it, we go down to the first sibling and across to get to the other siblings. But logically, CS2150 and CS4970, this looks like a directory hierarchy. Those two nodes are both children of Aaron in this case. Any questions on, yes?
So just by pointing to the first child yeah. of the nodes, to me, does it imply that it also has an edges to other linked nodes?
So the question is, does pointing to the first child imply that there are other children, or?
Yeah, for example, like since 2050 is connected to the lab one.
Yes.
So like, does that imply that it is also connected to lab two and project one?
Yeah, so because lab one is the first child, based on this pattern here, you assume that things going to the right are next sibling pointers. So lab one has a next sibling pointer, so it's also a child of CS2150. Yeah. So this, as I said, this representation is attractive mostly because we allocate a node once, we do one memory allocation for it, we knew it once, and that's it. So this other representation is more attractive, perhaps more natural, perhaps, because like you iterate through the children like you iterate through any array. But you might see it less often than you'd expect because people prefer not having to reallocate an array and allocate a new node when they add a child, which you don't have to do with the other representation. And they figure that, well, having a linked list is fine because I need to iterate through all the children anytime I care about the children anyways. And there also are a bunch more representations, which some of which look very different than either of these. But we'll probably talk about that sort of stuff more when we talk about graphs, which are generalization of trees. So they're representations which allow us to better represent more complicated relationships than just parents and children. which will, and we'll see some data structures that are better suited to those, or some use cases of those. Okay, so we've talked about tree representations. And one thing when we have a tree like this is we want to actually look over what the nodes are, like to print them out. And there are a couple logical different ways of doing it. And this is something with tree traversal. And we're going to mainly talk about three kinds of tree traversals, which come up all the time whenever you want to do something for everything in a tree. It's a pretty common operation. So presumably you remember binary search trees, kind of. So like if you have a binary search tree, one thing you might want to do is you might want to print out all the nodes in the binary search tree. So you're probably going to want to use some sort of traversal. And here I have a tree that represents an expression. So it represents some mathematical operations I'm going to be doing. And in fact, it represents this equation. And there are different ways I can traverse this tree. So one is what I'm going to call a pre-order traversal. And the pre part is that I'm going to visit parent nodes first. Or by visit, in this case, probably just means print out. If you were doing something other than printing out the nodes, it would, you know, you might be like performing some other operation, like actually trying to do arithmetic, then that would be what would happen then. So here we visit the root node, which is slash first, we visit the multiply node, then we visit the plus node, then we visit each of its children, and so on. So the order here is we visit a node, its left child, and its right child. And if we had presumably more than left and right, we just visit them in order, and we arbitrarily choose what that order is. In this case, for left and right, I've just arbitrarily chosen that left comes before right. For in order, this is a little trickier. So we're visiting the left child first, then the parent, then the right child. And we're doing this recursively. So first, we are at this slash node, and we visit the left child. And then we are saying we're visiting this, so we're going to start by visiting its left child, then we're going to start by visiting its left child, then this left child, then the node we're at now, which is plus, then the right child, then finally we get back up to here, visit the parent, and we just finished visiting the left child, that's why we're visiting the parent, so we're visiting the right child next. That's where we get this minus. So we visit 3, then minus, then 4, and so on. So, you know, in the naive implementation, which I'll show you in a second, we have a call stack here, where we have some recursive calls going on. You can do this without recursion by making a stack, but if you want to, which just works exactly the same way. And finally, we have a post-order traversal, and if you remember our postfix calculator, this should look very familiar. Looks kind of like an input you might put to your calculator, and it's exactly what we're producing. So in the post-order traversal, we visit the left child, then the right child, then the parent. So we visit the left child, we get to here, we recurse, we visit the left child, we recurse, we visit the left child, the right child, so you get 1 and 2, then we visit the parent, we get plus. Then we're up to here, we just finished visiting the left child, so we visit the right child, we visit this is right child, recursing, then the left child, then the parent, that's where we get 3, 4, minus, then we get back up to here, because we just finished visiting its left and right children, and we actually print out our multiply, and then we get back up to the slash and visit its right child, since we just finished visiting its left. So the basic notion here is that pre-order is root, then left, then right. In order is left, then root, then right. Right. And post order is left, right, and root. So any questions on these traversals? Okay. And as I said, implementing these is not too hard, especially if you don't mind using recursion. So for pre-order, you print the root, then you print the children. For post order, you print the children. This should be print post order up. Print the children, and you go to recurse to the children, and then print the root. And in order, you print the left, you print your own thing, and you print the right. And in order, if you don't have a binary tree, it's not clear what you should do, so we probably won't tell you to do that, because you have to define it for your tree with three children on each node, what it means. So the most obvious application of this is just printing out the values. And this is the application probably where the difference between the different types of traversals is most obvious. Like, there's a big difference between these three things we printed out. But often we'll end up using this for other things. So like if you want to count the number of nodes in the tree, you might write code something like this, where you just have a recursive function and you're effectively doing a post-order traversal. You're doing a kind of traversal, but it matters a lot less for counting the nodes because, well, any kind of traversal you do, whether you visit the nodes first before adding the one or not, whether you visit the left node and then the right node, left node, add one that for the current node, then visit the right node, doesn't change your results. So usually you don't notice, but it doesn't affect very much. But there are some things like printing it out where we will care about the kind of traversal we're doing. So any questions on this? Yeah. And generally, anytime you want to find out if something is true of the tree, probably you're going to end up doing a traversal if it's something about the whole tree. Okay, so we talked a bit about binary trees. So this is going to be our conventional representation of a binary tree. We're not going to use the first child, next sibling stuff because we have two children. We don't need to worry about storing arbitrary numbers of children. That doesn't actually save us space. And often when we're working with a binary tree, we actually really care about doing something with just the left or right side because we'll have assigned some significant feature, like in a binary search tree, to the left or right side. And our representation will be that we'll have some elements, a value which is stored at each node, and we'll have a left and a right pointer. If we aren't using one of them, they'll be null. Generally, I will not draw null nodes. So in this case, I'm drawing this long thing which looks kind of like a linked list. This is still a binary tree. I'm just not indicating any of the nodes which are null. And I'm still showing the direction here. So presumably the child of, so 3's child is a left child, but 2's child is a right child based on the direction I'm showing here. Oh, any questions on that? So you've seen before a special case of binary trees. So this is, binary tree just means you have this structure. It doesn't say anything about what the values are, but you've commonly worked with binary search trees. And in a binary search tree, so each node has a key. So it has some value which is stored, which isn't guaranteed for a binary tree, but typically it's pretty boring to have a binary tree where you just have a bunch of connections and no other information. And we have this property that if we look at keys in the left subtree, they're less than that the key of that node, and keys in the right subtree are greater. And what do I mean by subtrees? So a subtree is that if we take a node and treat it as if it were a root, the tree you get from doing that. So all the nodes that are reachable from, including it, through it or its children, but not going back up the tree. So here we have the left subtree of 4 and the right subtree of 4. And if we go further down, we have the right subtree of 5. And because I'm just not drawing null nodes, we just don't have a left subtree that's just empty. So these properties are what we have in a binary search tree. And as maybe you remember from a prior class, these help us conveniently use the binary search tree to find things and keep track of things. And we're going to talk about an extension of a binary search tree, which has most notably better big O performance. But we have to do a whole bunch of work to make that happen. So note that binary search trees, they're a special case of binary trees. So for example, if I have this 15 here, this means it's not a binary search tree because the 15 is part of the left child of 11. And it's bigger than 11, so we aren't allowed to do that. And similarly, this 21 is the left child of 20. So it's part of the left subtree, and it should be part of the right one because it's greater than 20. So we can have binary trees which aren't binary search trees because they violate the property that everything in the left subtree is less, everything in the right subtree is greater. So in this case, we're violating that property for, we have 15 is greater than 11, and 21 is greater than 20. So these are all should not be in those two left subtrees. So any questions on this? Generally how you would test to see whether a binary tree is a binary search tree? Okay. So I would note that sometimes you'll see people use the phrase binary tree, and they really mean binary search tree. We're going to try not to do that, but that's something that happens in the real world, is that people say store it in a binary tree, and they really mean a binary search tree. Often they really mean not just a binary search tree, but what is called a balanced binary search tree, like the type we'll talk about probably later today, or if not on Friday. So I think this is mostly review for people. Is this true? People actually remember this? Wasn't too long ago. So finding in a binary search tree, we're going to take advantage of the property that, well, first, that if it's less than our current key, the node with that key is going to be in the left subtree. And if it's greater, it's going to be in the right, to know which direction we go down the tree. So we have a node we're at, and we're going to go left or right based on the comparison, and we're going to do a recursively call our find routine. You can also implement this without recursion pretty easily because it's tail recursive, so you just turn it into a loop. And we have our last case where we actually found it. I don't have an explicit test for that because if it's not greater or less, well, you know what it is. And for inserting, the insert algorithm that's easiest is that here, using this trick of passing a reference to a pointer. So presumably, this could be a reference to ref to node right of some other node's right pointer, for example. So we could be modifying other node's right pointer in the case where that was already null. So this is one way of writing it. You could also have had that case also have not passed a reference to a pointer and had and have some extra logic when we do a recursive call to insert to instead, if it's null, do something different. But here we're passing a reference to a null pointer, which we replace with a real value. And that reference, because it's a reference to that pointer, we're changing the, say, right or left pointer that we pass a reference to here or here. This is just our standard insert algorithm. We just do the same thing we do when we find, except we expect that we're going to get down to a null pointer, and we want to replace that null pointer with a new node. So it's otherwise the same as find until we get to the end. And being able to do quick find and insert is sort of the attractive thing about BSD, is that this is kind of log n time, that we're dividing our search space in half each time, hopefully. And that lets us quickly find things. Since we keep things in sorted order, it's also convenient to find minimum and maximum. So we know the minimum is just go all the way left. Or I guess this should be find min, because I like writing. We just go all the way left. If we want to find the max, we go all the way right. And for removing elements, that's a little trickier. So we have simple cases. So if we want to remove 7 here, we just say, oh, there's no children. That's easy. We just get rid of 9's child. Lines left child pointer, make it null. And also hopefully actually free up the memory for the node that stores 7. If we have 1 child, we just substitute in the child for the node and its parent. So here we're getting rid of 1. We're going to take 4's child pointer and make it point to 1's only child. If we have 2 children, there's multiple ways we can do this. So one option is if they say we're getting rid of our root here, is to just replace it with the minimum of the right subtree or the maximum of the left subtree. Because that will have the correct relationship as far as making sure everything in the left subtree is still less than the key, everything in the right is still greater. That is interesting. So those are 3 cases, and that's what our remove binary search tree remove. That's one way of implementing it. There are other ways you can handle this third case, I'm pretty sure. But this is probably the simplest one. So any questions about this? Yeah.
So why can we use Maxwell's left subtree?
So why can we use the maximum of the left subtree?
Yes.
So the maximum of the left subtree in this case is 4. And 4 is greater than all of these. And we know that's true because 5 had to be greater than all of those. Because it's the root, because it's the right subtree. And because it's the maximum of this tree, we know 4 is less, than all of these, in the right subtree, all of these here. And we know that 4 is also greater than all of these, because it's the maximum of that half of the tree. Therefore, we know we can safely put it at the top. Other questions? Okay. So since we reviewed binary trees and binary search trees, let's talk about where they're bad. And the big problem with simple binary search tree is the way we've described, is that you can end up with this binary search tree. And if you're going to often end up with this binary search tree, well, you might as well have used a linked list, because that's, you have a linked list, but you're wasting 8 bytes for in each node for a pointer that doesn't do anything. And so what we'd like to have instead is we'd like to have sort of our best case binary tree. And that's going to be one with this depth, this height. So we're going to have height h. So we're going to have 2 to the h plus 1 minus 1 nodes. So here we have height 2. So we have 2 to the 3 minus 1 is 7 nodes. And this is the best packing we can do. And we want to get close to that. So first of all, let's show that this is the best we can do. So the intuition here is that we can show that this is best because when we build up a tree, we're going to say, we're going to look at, say, when we want to build up a tree of height 1, what we're going to do is we're going to say, I have trees of height 0, which is just an empty node, and I'm going to attach 2 of them. When we build up a tree of height 2 in this case, I'm going to take my best tree of height 1 and attach 2 of them. And that's exactly what we did here. And so based on that idea, we can show that we can have this number of nodes. And with a similar argument, you could also probably show that this is the best you can do. So one way of doing this is, if you remember induction, and don't want to just turn away when you see it. So you can prove this by induction using that principle. So you say, OK, we want to show that we can have this formula worth number of nodes in a binary tree. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, well, if height equals 0, that's easy. That's a tree with one node, no children, it's just a root, has height 0. And that's 2 to the 1 minus 1 is 1. It has one node. We're good. And then you just want to show that it happens as you go forward. And so what you're going to do is you're going to say, well, we're going to use the inductive hypothesis. We're going to say, let's assume we've done this for height equals k. And that means I can assume I have a copy of a tree that has that number of nodes with height k. I'm going to make 2 copies of that. And I'm just going to take those 2 copies, add a root node, plug them together, and now I have 2 times, this is the number of nodes there, nodes in one of those copies, plus 1 nodes in total. And I just need to show that that's equal to the formula for k plus 1. Yeah. Yes, I believe you are correct. So this should be k plus 1, k plus 2, and k plus 2. I should change the whole thing to be k minus 1 to k. It should be the same thing. And so the intuition here is that this proof, that this shows that it is possible to have a tree with that many nodes for all these heights, and that this is the right formula for that. And it makes sense that this would be the biggest tree, because intuitively, well, everything that isn't a root or a child or a leaf has 2 children. And you could kind of informally argue that there's no way to add nodes without increasing height. We haven't actually done like a very formal proof that you can't do better, but this is the sort of argument you would make. Is that? I think you need to. So you might say, well, this has 2 children. I don't think it's as straightforward as it sounds, because when we're doing the inductive proof, we're finding a tree with that number of nodes. We're not actually showing it's the only one. Yeah.
So
So I think the root also has two children. I think you meant to say like except the leaves.
Yes, I did. So we'll make this so except for leaves. Yeah, everything has two children. I guess maybe I was thinking everything has three connections, which is probably an easier way to prove it, but not with stuff I would assume you know. Okay. So it turns out that this is the best height you can do. That, like, the shortest height you can do with a number of nodes. So generally, you know, we can say that we can limit the number of nodes, and we can come up with this property that the height, based on this being the best case, is always greater than log base 2 of the number of nodes plus 1 minus 1. And we'll just usually shorthand this and say that if we have a tree of n nodes, the height is about, for the ideal height, is about log 2 base of n. The worst height is n. We could just have them all in one direction. But the ideal height for our binary tree is about log base 2 of n. And this matches our intuition that a good binary search tree, every time we go down, we divide our space in half. Okay. And this is exactly I once again can't put exponents in here. This should be 2, yeah, I have to just write 2 to the h plus 1, not 2h plus 1. We'll call the trees that achieve that perfect trees. That's going to be our special name for trees which have the best possible height, have all the spaces filled in, exactly the ones we came across when proving that property. Oh, yeah, things in the wrong order. Okay. And apparently I put my slides in the wrong order, but I probably still should cover this. I meant to cover this just after traversals, obviously. So just a note on traversals and constructing trees. So we have our expression tree here. That was my example for a traversal. We had our three different traversals. And we can, in fact, go backwards from the traversal to the tree. And sort of the way, the easiest algorithm to do that, if you take a postfix expression, like your calculator, is that you can use this to construct that tree back. What you can think about it is instead of having a stack of numbers, you just have a stack of expression trees, trees which represent an expression. So if we add a number, we push not the number, but we push a tree with one node, which is that number. Whenever we have an operator, we pop two things, and we push a tree, which is that operator and those two things. So when we do A and B, we push those two numbers, or in this case, maybe variables. When we add them together, we pop them from the stack and push plus and those two things. We have a stack of trees. When we add C, D, and E, we push those two values. We add C plus D. This should be D plus E, which I think I correct in the next slide. D plus E. And then we add them together. Then we have the multiply, we pop the two things, pop C and plus D and E, put them together, and then we pop the two values and connect them with the multiply. And this is basically the reverse of the traversal we saw earlier. And I'm sorry for doing this binary trees and this and out of order. Okay, so let's go to our next topic, which is We looked at these trees which are unbalanced, and we have some reasons where we care about them, like expression trees. Well, we're not caring about having them be nicely balanced, we just want them to represent some structure. But with binary search trees, we want to divide the space in half each time. We don't want that sort of structure, because we want to represent as less than greater than, we want to divide up our space evenly. And there are many kinds of balanced trees where we're going to have this guarantee. And AVL trees are a kind we're going to talk about in a bunch of detail. And these are a kind of search tree which is balanced in order to keep the height some constant factor of log n. So theta of log n is going to be our height. So it's going to be bounded no matter how big the tree is. It's not going to be perfect necessarily, but we're going to have some constant factor maximum. And the name AVL comes from the names of its inventors. And to do this, we're going to have to define a particular guarantee. And that guarantee is that the height of the left and right subtrees differs by at most one. So our theta log n is going to be that it's, going to be at most basically one off from the best we could do. And to do this, we're going to have our normal binary tree stuff, and we're going to keep track of a little extra information, which is what we're going to call a balance factor. This is the balance factor, which is the height of the right subtree minus the left subtree, or you could do vice versa. But we're just going to keep track of how close we are to satisfying our property. And this is only minus 1, 0, or plus 1 because of the property I said we're going to guarantee. We're never going to let it be a more than one difference. Whenever that happens, we'll have that temporarily it will be minus 2 or plus 2, but we'll fix it right away. And we're going to keep this up to date on insert and delete because computing it on demand is not going to be practical. We don't want to have to traverse the entire tree every time to make sure that it's still balanced. So here's an example AVL tree. So it satisfies the property that our balance is different by at most one. And we can see that by writing out balance factors. So here I have a node which is plus one because this subtree has height two, this one has height one. So you can think of it as it seesaws over to the right side. And here we have minus one because this seesaws over to the left side. We have more stuff on the left side. And here we have minus one because this left side has more stuff, and so on. So this is an AVL tree. It satisfies that property, even though it's maybe not the most perfect way of representing this binary tree. But as long as we keep these numbers plus or minus one or zero, we're going to not have it be too out of balance. So versus if we did something like this, this isn't an AVL tree. Because this node here are too imbalanced. That here we have a depth 3 on the left side and depth 0 on the right. So that has a minus 3, which is 2 more than we're allowed to have. So this is not an AVL tree. Yes? B is the balance factor. It's the difference between the height of the left and right subtrees. It's how far off from perfectly balanced we are. So a perfect tree has all zero balance factors. That one where we have everything filled in, everything has two children except for the leaves, and we go, everything's the same height, all nice and symmetric. That's a perfect tree. Okay, so next time, we'll talk about algorithms for an AVL tree, and it won't be me. So I'm out of town, so Marissa, one of our TAs, will be covering lecture for me, and she should do a good job. It should be audio recorded, but I won't guarantee it will be video recorded because logistics of doing that are tricky.